All right. Isn't it interesting that as children, we used to fight sleep, but as we become older, we fight for sleep? Well, we're going to start a brand new series of sermons today, and I don't mean to imply you can sleep through them, but we're going to call this sermon head scratchers or things that we just want you to try and wrap your minds around. Because we're going to look at some of these oddball, off-the-beaten-path stories that I've never really preached on. The only exception to that is next week we're going to talk about Mephibosheth. And I have talked about him in a sermon in the past or two, but I've never really centered a whole sermon around him, so he still kind of qualifies for this. And I'm kind of excited that I actually just said his name. If you remember when I preached a little bit about Mephibosheth in the past, I called him Phibby because I couldn't even say that word. But in today's story, what we're going to do is we're going to discover a need for sleep in a fairly humorous way. What I want to do over these next few weeks is to kind of just tone down a little bit. We've studied some fairly substantial and heavy topics for a few weeks and tried to really point out some deep truths of Scripture that are so important. Just for a few weeks, going to lighten it up a little bit and find some practical tips for real living from the Bible that I think we can learn from too. The first of them comes from Acts chapter 20. Now, just a little background on this text before we get into it. Paul, the Apostle Paul, is in the country of Greece. He had gone to Greece and established churches all throughout the country, and now he's back there for a second time encouraging the Christians and the churches there that he had already established. And that's where the story begins. Acts chapter 20, verse 7 says this. Paul was preaching to them, and since he was leaving the next day, he kept talking until midnight. Now, my guess is probably most of you here have been at least in one church service that just was horribly long, right? We've probably all had one of those experiences where the service, we thought it was never going to end. Maybe a funeral, maybe a wedding, or maybe just a regular church service when the preacher didn't know when it was time to land the plane. But if you've ever come here, if you've come here for very long, I think you know that we really value and respect your time. I never want to waste your time by droning on and on just to fill in the time. But on occasion, I might have a point I want to drive home and might take an extra minute or two, but try to be reasonable. One of my favorite preachers of all time used to say this from time to time, I've never heard a bad short sermon. And to be honest with you, I haven't either. But Paul didn't understand that, and he preached until midnight. But listen to what happens next. As Paul spoke on and on, I love the way they've translated that, a young man named Eutychus, sitting on the windowsill, became very drowsy. Finally, he fell asleep and dropped there and dropped three stories to his death. I didn't learn much about Eutychus when I was a young child, but there's one thing I remember from my childhood Sunday school days. The teacher said, you'll never forget the name Eutychus, because I want you to remember that you would have cussed too if you would have fallen from a three-story window. Eutychus, you would have cussed? I don't know. But here's the good news. Here's the good news of the story. There's a redemptive part to it. Paul raises Eutychus from the dead, which is pretty impressive. But there's bad news at the end of the story, verse 11. Paul continued talking to them until dawn, and then he left. People are probably like, glad he's gone. But the story creates some head-scratching type of questions, at least for me personally. Like, was Eutychus in grad school? You know, was he pulling an all-nighter? Was he a young dad taking care of the infant in the middle of the night so his wife could sleep? Probably a good Mother's Day thought. We're not told what made him so tired. We're just told that he was so tired, it literally killed him. I don't want that for any of us, so here's a challenge for you today. How about a commitment that says, I will live slower so that I can live longer? Because some of us, I think, just need to learn to say no sometimes. And for some of us, that's really, really, really hard to do. Right? Say no to a few appointments. Say no to a few activities. Say no to a few special requests so that you can spend more time on those things that really, really matter, like spending time with the people you love first. I found that this was getting especially hard for our family. Many activities, many obligations, everyone going in different directions, and we finally had to establish a rule, and we just made Tuesday night family night. Everyone's got to not make plans for that night, and we just stay together all night long. Like, you have to force it to happen sometimes. I read of this last week about a Fortune 500 CEO who walked away, literally, from a $1 million a year salary because his 8-year-old daughter handed him a list of things she had written out that he had already missed from her life. School play, soccer games, tucking her in at night. Our culture has elevated speed to virtue status. And our culture, it seems, has no intentions of slowing down. And if we don't want to wear down, we're going to have to forcibly slow down. And I suspect the truth is most of us in this room today could benefit from a little more sleep, probably none of us from a little less sleep. So I think it would be good to identify some of the things that rob us of a good night's rest. First on my mind is worry. Worry is probably the top of the list. Worry makes us weary. I mean, you're driving from one activity to the next. You're sitting at your desk and you're thinking about the economy. You're looking at the price on the gas pump, and you're like, my goodness, am I ever going to be able to pay all these bills? How am I ever going to be able to retire? Or maybe you just look at your kids and your grandkids, and you're worried about the culture they're going to inherit. All the lies they're being bombarded with, literally, and all the more now because of AI. There's stuff out there that pops up on social media feeds. I don't even know if it's true anymore. Worry can make us weary. Number two, being busy can burn us out. Like, you look at your schedule and you're just in meeting after meeting or appointment after appointment or place after place after place where you have to be, and that can just sometimes leave you in a fog. It will leave you relationally and occupationally frustrated. Sometimes it's even hard to put your finger on it. But the truth is, and we can all relate with this, is we just need a little more rest. That's why the doctor's note to us from the great physician simply says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. It's interesting to me that Jesus gives us two steps to find rest. The first is, come to me. Now, I want you to notice what he didn't say here. He didn't say, go to him, go to her, go to the beach, go to the mountain, go lay in the hammock, get a sleep number bed. You know, those things all might work. But Jesus said, if you're really, really, really tired and you really, really, really want to find rest, come to me. So I started thinking about this, scratching my head. What does that look like? So you take him up on the invitation. Thursday night, he says, hey, come over to my house. So you take him up on the offer. You ring the doorbell and Jesus opens the door and he just lights up like a Christmas tree because he's so happy to see you. And he invites you in. He hugs you. There's this warmth. There's this good feeling. And you go to the house, and as soon as you walk in, you just feel safe and warm. You kick off your shoes. He leads you into the dining room, and in the dining room, there's this tremendous spread of food. And you look at the dishes, and you suddenly realize, man, those are all of my favorite foods. How'd he know? You know, he didn't ask you what you wanted. He just seems to understand you. So you sit down, you put your feet under the table, and man, Jesus is just a natural conversationalist. You're having this great conversation. He's asking some really good questions. You're having a great time. There's some laughter. And then towards the end of the meal, he says, how are you doing? Like, really? How are you doing? And there's something in the look on his eyes that tells you he really wants to know. He's sincerely asking this question, and he's really interested in you. And you start to tell him. And you start to tell him things you've never told anybody. And by the end of it, there's this empathy that just hangs over the room. And he leans a little bit closer and he says, I'm going to take some of that from you. I'm going to lift it. I'm going to lighten it. And he suddenly removes your insecurity and he replaces it with confidence. Not cockiness, but this comfort in your own skin that you've never felt before and you're feeling really good about yourself. There's this release. And then he removes your pain, and he replaces it with peace. And all of a sudden, you have this perspective. You're no longer angry with your parents. You're no longer demanding of your ex-spouse. And then he moves in and he lifts the sadness and he replaces it with joy. And your eyes are opening. And all of a sudden you begin to see all the good things that are happening in your life. The bad things, they're just kind of moved off to the side. They're still there. But your eyes are focused now on something different. You're able to laugh, maybe for the first time in a long time. And suddenly you realize why he said, come to me. Suddenly you realize why he wanted you to spend some time with him. Of course, the meal ends and the time comes, you have to go home. You leave his house and reality hits. You got things to do. Meeting in New York tomorrow, you fly off to New York and you head off to the big downtown. There's these gigantic office buildings there and you're immediately greeted by the statue of Atlas, the Greek god. You know, he's got this great physique. He's cut. He's strong. But he's bent over because he's being punished. Like if you know your Greek mythology, he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders. And you kind of nod in affirmation because you're like, yeah, I kind of know what it's like to carry a little weight around. Then you go further down Fifth Avenue and you say, man, I'm going to duck into St. Patrick's Cathedral and just take a moment to pray. And you see this little statue of Jesus as a boy. It's curious because he's holding the world in his hands. Your mind, you're thinking, man, that's quite a feat. Quite a juxtaposition, actually. Either I hold the weight of the world on my shoulder and it leads to exhaustion, or I surrender it to Jesus because even as a child, he seems to make it look easy. So you leave the cathedral and you're thinking about this a little bit. You're like, I want to just dwell on this a little longer. So you head down to this 840 acres of space in the middle of Manhattan that they call Central Park. 40 million other people are going to visit that place this year. They'll spread their picnic baskets out, their blankets out. They'll have their picnic baskets. They'll be flying Frisbees. They'll be walking their dog. They'll be jogging. There's all kinds of activity going on there, but the number one activity going on in Central Park is inactivity. The designers of this park actually wanted it that way. Did you know there are 9,000 park benches in Central Park? They knew that if we don't slow down, we'll wear down. I always found it interesting that literally smack dab in the middle of the Bible is this book called the Psalms. And no matter what shape you are, when you're reading this book of Psalms, there's honesty in them. You just can't help but miss the honesty of David, who wrote the majority of them. There's vulnerability in them, where he's just laying out his life bare before us. It doesn't matter how you feel when you come to the Psalms. What matters is how you leave. That's what the Father was concerned about. So right in the middle of the Psalms, King David says, he, God, makes me lie down in green pastures. It's an interesting statement. I've never thought about it till this last week. It doesn't say God invites me to lie down in green pastures. It doesn't say he suggests that I take a moment and lie down in the green pastures. It says he makes me because he knows that we all have this tendency to carry the weight of the world around on our shoulders. And he demands, and we've got all these demands and expectations of everyone else, our family, our friends, our work, our churches even. Kind of like that sheep that got loose in Australia. They named him Barack. I love that name. And he was roaming around, and bicyclists and hikers and hunters would see him in the woods. He got off the ranch, and he was on the lam for a while. No. He's out there running around, and eventually they captured him. And to the surprise, at the moment they captured him, this lamb was no longer able to walk. He wasn't able to see because he had 75 pounds of excess wool. So very gently, they tipped him over, and they sheared him. And as soon as they were done, this little lamb was able to walk again and see again. What's fascinating is someone probably got a really nice Christmas sweater out of the deal, right? Sometimes good things come out of it. Or maybe you saw this video of this little girl trying to walk her dog. It's a simple task, but she can't seem to catch up. And so she's constantly chasing the leash. And if you watch this, you'll see every so often, it's like her body doesn't work in a very coordinated way. She'll bend down, try to grab the leash, but her hands are a little slow. The dog doesn't seem to know, seems to know, and keeps moving and running off as if to trick her. What's really funny to me is that his mom that's there, obviously, she's watching, she's filming this and not offering to help one little bit. Happy Mother's Day. Well, just so you know, she's never gonna catch it. So what is it? Oh, I forgot that. What is this? I didn't cut it off on time. Hey, what is this? What is it? What is it in your life that you're carrying around or you're chasing that's just robbing you of rest? John Gardner describes the dilemma in American culture when he says, we can keep ourselves so busy, fill our life with so many diversions, stuff our heads with so much knowledge, involving ourselves with so many people, and cover so much ground that we never have time to probe the fearful and wonderfully made world within. By middle life, most of us are accomplished fugitives from ourselves. Oh man, don't let that happen to you. Getting to midlife and not even knowing who we really are? We need to be aware. So let me build on what Jesus said. First, he said, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened, I will give you rest. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. Two steps. Come to me and learn from me. Well, let's get back to Jesus' house again. Table's cleared. He does all the dishes, and you're just relaxing. He comes in with a big bowl and two spoons. It's your favorite dessert. How do you know? And the two of you begin to dig in. And then Jesus says, you know what? The first part was easy. Most people accept the invitation to come to me. They struggle with that second part. Learn from me. He's like, this is where it can get a little painful because you're going to have to unlearn some old habits. He said, but I've made it as simple as I possibly can. He's like, the reason I came was just to show you how to live a better life, a healthier life. So watch me. Now it's easy for us to read through the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and get all of the little details. To take it story after story after story, and we should do that. There's a lot to learn there, but sometimes we can miss the big overview picture. Because if you study the Gospels as a whole and look at the 3 years of Jesus' ministry, you're going to see this rhythm or this beautiful schedule he kept. It looks like this: divert daily, withdraw weekly, and abandon yearly. You can see this over and over in Jesus' life. Daily, you need at least one activity that gives you some life, okay? Maybe reading a book, listening to a podcast, walking your dog, going for a walk, whatever it is, where you can find a little peace for yourself for a short time, do it. Weekly, you need at least one day where you can do what you want to do, not necessarily what you have to do. Isn't it interesting, running errands and appointments? The things that just linger over us, they can drain us if we're not careful. We need a day where we can just not have to worry about those details and just enjoy. And then you need to be able to abandon annually. At least 1 week where you can completely unplug your life, get out of town, don't answer emails. So you're diverting daily, you're withdrawing weekly, you're abandoning annually. I want to talk just for a moment physiologically why that's so important. Because we are fearfully and wonderfully made by our Creator. Every DNA chromosome in your body has a little protective protein or sheath around it called telomere. Anyone ever hear of telomere? A telomere acts like the end of your shoelace, literally. You know that little plastic end of your shoelace that holds the whole shoelace together? It's really tight, so you can easily weave that shoelace in and out of the eyelets on your shoes. Well, what happens when that little plastic piece breaks down or cracks or falls off? The shoelace frays. It's almost impossible to thread. It doesn't serve its purpose. A telomere in your body acts the same way. When you don't get enough physical rest, the telomere begins to break down, which prevents the cells in your body from dividing. When the cells in your body don't divide, you begin to age prematurely, which eventually leads to us passing away prematurely. There was a fascinating article in the Boston Globe about it. There's a researcher by the name of Susan Coven. She said, in the past few years, I have observed an epidemic of sorts, patient after patient suffering from the same conditions. The symptoms of this condition include fatigue, irritability, insomnia, anxiety, headaches, heartburn, bowel disturbances, back pain, weight gain. There are no blood tests or x-ray diagnostics of this condition, and yet it's easy to recognize. The condition is excessive busyness. If we're not careful, if we're just not getting enough rest tonight, it literally takes away from our life. I don't know if my professor knew anything about that when he was teaching, or if he just realized this from reading scripture, but he used to say this to us over and over, you cannot travel faster than the person you are following. Think about it. Jesus was the most joyful person to ever live because he did not chase what this world was offering him. So the challenge is to keep Jesus in front of us. If we stay behind him, we're going to be in good shape. We have this value system oriented around us about what really matters. We got to be careful it doesn't dissuade us. Jesus asked this important question, what do you benefit if you gain the whole world, get everything this world has to offer, but lose your soul? I can't tell you really how many families I've seen unravel because of arguments and impulsive behavior, how many businesses I've seen unravel because of greed and selfishness. Can't tell you how many churches I know of that have unraveled because of disagreements and things that didn't matter at all according to the Gospels of Christ. At some point, all of us who are followers of Jesus Christ need to ask ourselves, what do I gain if I win this argument? What do I gain if I get all this money and make my point? What if I lose my family? What if I lose my business? What if I lose my church? What ultimately do I gain if I give up everything that really matters? So last week I was reading an evaluation of our society, and I thought this was an interesting statement. The writer referred to American culture as a distraction factory. It's interesting terminology. It resonated with me. It made sense as soon as I read it. I knew exactly what he was talking about. I see our culture just creating all these distractions at a dizzying rate. And sometimes, I mean, I get caught up in it. When I pay attention to these distractions, it makes me feel empty and tired. And so of all that, I have to ask myself, why is that? I have a friend who's really good with graphics and computer art, and I asked him to make this graphic that just pinpoints. These are just some of the companies that target me in one day. There are these algorithms. If you're on social media or Google or anything on a computer, these people are tracking you. And they're studying you. And then they're throwing all these things at you. And Google seems to know me well enough to know where I shop, what I like to buy. It knows me. It knows where there are companies I've never done business with, but they target me because they want to get me to do business with them. Everyone wants a little piece of me. And they want a little piece of you too. So they target us. They tell us they have something that we really need. And so there's this distraction factory out there. And if I'm not carefully guarding my heart, this can become a distraction warehouse where I store pile and pile of things and things and things and ideas and information that I don't need at all. King David said, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet or still waters. That same king said, from the rising of the sun to the place where it sets, the name of the Lord is to be praised. I think it's good to, from time to time, just drive in the direction heading west and see the sunset. It's like, that's cool. Sometimes in the morning, because of the time I leave and head east, I can see the sunrise rising in the distance, and it comes just over the courthouse and Howell. I'm like, man, that is such a cool picture. This past week, kind of knowing what I was going to preach, I would intentionally just stop and look at the sunrise in the east and think, it is fantastic. God just really has a way of showing off his craftsmanship. And I thought, I wonder if I can give you a definition of awe. I kind of like this idea. Awe is perceived vastness. See, all too often I'm going inside through my phone or watching television. But if I could just go outside, you can see God show up every single day, every single morning, every single night. When's the last time you simply appreciated a sunrise or a sunset? Let me point your direction to the sky. Because when you watch the sun come up and go down, awe comes. And when that happens, fatigue begins to dissipate. I want to encourage you to take just a couple days. Watch it come up. Watch it go down. That doesn't work for you because of timing? Find a dark night. And just go up and look into the vastness of the starry sky at night. And the vastness ought to be overwhelming to you. God overwhelms. He overjoys. He calms. He collects. Because he's big, we can be small. He's strong, and that allows us at times just to be weak. Heard about one other king. Not quite like King David, who everything that a king would want. He was sitting on a throne one day, and he was doing calculations. He had conquered nation after nation after nation. He had this treasury full of gold and silver. He had more stuff, more wine, more of this world's goods than any man could ever imagine. He had it all, but he wasn't happy. The look on his face told his advisors that he wasn't happy. And one day a lead advisor to the king said, "King, we recognize you're sad. Why?" The king said, "I'm just not content. Can't put my finger on it. I'm not fulfilled." The advisors thought for a while and they came up with a plan. They said, "I'll tell you what we'll do, King. We're going to search the kingdom for a man that's content. We'll take his shirt and we'll bring it home to you. If you put on his shirt, maybe some of that contentment will transfer to you." King thought, "Good idea. Why not? Let's give it a try." And so the advisors left. They went out. For 2 weeks, they searched and they searched and they searched. And after a 2-week search, they finally found one guy. They felt this guy was content. And they came back with the report. They said to the king, "We found the man." The king's like, "You did?" And they're like, "Yes, sire, we did." And the king's like, "Where's the shirt?" They said, "Your Majesty, he didn't have one." We got to live slower. The only way to do that is to really come to Jesus. Not just come to him, but to learn from him. So we don't end up like the king who has everything he wants, but nothing that he needs. Well, back to Wayne Smith's statement. I've never heard a bad short sermon. Me either, so happy Mother's Day. Don't fall asleep on me. Enjoy this day.